Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast. Interviews with candidates running for mayor, city council, and school board trustee in Hamilton, Ontario. Episode 146. Andrea Horvath, you are running for mayor of Hamilton. Welcome to the 155 Election Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here, Joey.
Firstly, tell us a little bit about why you are running.
I decided to throw my hat in the ring for mayor because I believe the city's best days are ahead. Yes, we have some challenges, but I think we have a lot of great opportunities as well. And I believe that I bring to this race some experience, some thoughtfulness, some knowledge, not only of our city, but on how government works and how to get things done. And that's pretty much why I decided to jump in. I just feel like I have a lot to offer to the people of the city that I love.
Would you please share four of your priorities, why they are priorities, and how you will implement them?
Sure. Thanks for that. One of my priorities is the housing crisis that we're in, and it's something that I hear resonating with people I speak to each and every day during this campaign. And the housing crisis is broad. It's not just one type of housing or another. It is everything from needing supportive housing for the most vulnerable folks in our communities, our neighbors who are houseless, who are butting up against the winter. And if we don't start finding some real solutions, we are going to see some real tragedies on our streets. And that is on us if we don't address it. So everything from those vulnerable folks who need those wraparound services, who need that transitional housing, all the way to affordable rental housing, so social type housing for people whose incomes are never going to be able to meet the market rents, rental housing, purpose-built rental housing that's affordable for folks, rental housing in the just new stock period, and housing that people can actually afford to purchase. And that's of every kind, whether it's a condo, whether it's a townhouse, that missing middle housing, whether it's a home. We need to meet all of those needs. So many young people are without housing right now and are worried that they are never going to get out of the basement of their parents' home. They've given up their dreams of ever being able to have their own place. We can do better. And so how do we fix that? I'm hearing from the not-for-profit sector, the private developers, that there are real backlogs that need to be addressed. And I think we can get through them by bringing people together to talk about how we get through those backlogs. A collaborative approach, right? An approach where we solve the problems by bringing people together to figure out the solutions. And I've always operated that way, and I always will, because I really believe that's how you get to the best solution. So housing is a big one, Joey, a big one. We know that there are problems at City Hall in terms of not only kinds of processes I was just talking about, but there are difficulties in terms of the environment, if you want to call it that way. There seems to be a complete lack of respect for each other, for the public, for the staff, vice versa, for the senior administration. So there's just so many what appear to be toxic relationships that have grown over time. We need to start unpacking that. We need to unpack that in a big way. So one of the solutions that I believe will be helpful is to bring that as well to a discussion. So we have people who are unhappy, rightfully so, about what went down with the Red Hill Creek Expressway, which is why we're in a public inquiry. We have people that are horrified, as I am, about the Shadoke Creek situation, the effluent and the leaking of the combined sewer overflow tank into the creek and into Coots Paradise. And that people were actually identifying that that was a problem. The water keepers, coincidentally, one of whom I met just on our way here as I was downtown, they were being ignored. Their voices weren't being heard. So there's a lot of issues around that. So there's the toxic environment. There's the lack of engagement with the public. There's the lack of transparency. There's the lack of accountability. I believe the best way to address or tackle those pieces is with a diverse table of individuals in our city coming together to have at it, basically, to have that conversation. I don't think that a mayor's job is to sit on high and dictate. I think a mayor's job is to listen, to engage, to pull people together, and to have a collaborative approach, not only because I think that's how you get the best solutions, but I think it's also how you get people on board to make sure those solutions thrive, make sure those solutions actually are implemented in a way that is successful. So that whole piece, the toxicity along with the engagement and the need to be more accountable and more transparent, is a big issue. I think our economy is another big issue. If we talk about affordable housing, we also have to talk about good jobs that pay the bills. So we need to be growing our economy in a way that provides those good jobs, that's thoughtful about a just transition to the green economy. And so when I go for a tour of the Slate Asset Management project with the old Stelco lands, hearing them talk about green industry, hearing them talk about reutilizing this industrial land for jobs of the future, that makes me excited. So there's projects like that, but there's also the digital economy that we could be doing better at here in Hamilton. We have so much assets around the healthcare sector, around the academic sector, MAC and Mohawk, the Innovation Park. We have people who are doing this work very close by in other cities, particularly in regions like Kitchener-Waterloo. I've sat at the table with some of those folks. I've been to those initiatives, and it's amazing what can be done. We need to do better when it comes to those kinds of jobs as well. I could talk about jobs a lot, but it's not just jobs, right? It's decent jobs that are jobs of the future, that are jobs that really take advantage of our infrastructure when it comes to education and healthcare. But it's also jobs that pay the bills. They have to be good jobs that pay the bills. So the economy and jobs. So the other thing I'm hearing from people is a real concern, Joey, about safety on our streets. And I know that the city's been trying to find some solutions, but we can't have a city where parents are afraid to let their kids walk to the corner park. We need roads that are safe for all users, and we don't have that right now. And again, I'm happy to see that there are some initiatives, and I congratulate the councillors that have been pushing for those. I believe engaging citizens in their own neighborhoods and their own communities about what the solutions are for their local roads is extremely important, but we need to do better, not only in terms of things like the exemption for right-hand turns on a red, narrowing up of some of the traffic lanes, reducing the speed of cars and all of that. But there's one piece I feel that we've missed, and that's really being honest about drivers having to take responsibility for their actions on the road. So when I go drive through my neighborhood, I'm very careful. I'm very cognizant of what's been happening on our roads. But I still see cars whizzing by me, you know, jotting in and out in a residential neighborhood. We literally on the way here, no bones about it. We stopped at a red light. There was a van coming up. There was a woman crossing the street. She was in front of our car. The van went through the red light. If she had gone four more steps, we would have witnessed a pretty awful accident on Bay Street. That's a problem. So that's a big priority for me as well. And it's a priority because I hear it from Hamiltonians in every part of the city.
Let's turn to intergovernmental affairs and use a specific issue you will need to negotiate this coming term of council to illustrate your approach and philosophy. The city of Hamilton owns the land that is Burlington's LaSalle Park. The piece of land has sparked numerous emotional disputes between the cities of Hamilton and Burlington. Threats of fencing off the property were common from Hamilton during the 1970s and 80s. Even after a 40-year lease was signed in 1983, absurd posturing has occurred at regular intervals since. The lease expires on December 30th, 2022. What is your position regarding the lease, and how will you conduct yourself during the talks?
Well, I'm going to answer the second part first, which is you always conduct talks in a respectful and collegial way. You never get to a solution if your attitude is my way or the highway. If your attitude is pugnacious, confrontational, that is not how you get to solutions. So first and foremost, that's the approach I will take on everything. It's about sitting down at a table and having straight up, thoughtful, respectful conversations. And to be frank, I'm not going to prejudge where those conversations end up, because that's the other way that you get good decisions, is you listen, you negotiate, and you come up with the best solution that is possible in a positive environment. So I know it's been confrontational and controversial for a very long time. I think we need to take the controversy and put it straight up on the table, but without the confrontation. And I believe we'll be able to get to a solution that we can all live with, and that we can all be proud of the fact that we behaved well and have something that we can show for that behavior.
The city of Hamilton's financial situation is concerning. Recent councils have drained the city's reserves. When the federal government recently gave the city of Hamilton a one-time $30 million infusion of funds for infrastructure, the money was split into $2 million for each of the 15 councillors to spend on political ward initiatives during the election cycle. The future fund? Well, it may not have any future left, having been spent instead of invested. All of this is to say you have a difficult budget ahead of you. There will be significant tax increases for the coming 2 years to maintain current services. Even if we are able to find efficiencies, those savings are years away. How are you approaching this coming budget, and what are your budget priorities?
First of all, I think that there's a lot of concern about the finances of the city, and what I don't want to do is be paralyzed by that. We can choose to worry that the walls are falling in, or we can try to take hold of a future that's going to be more hopeful and more problem-solving oriented. Having said that, I'm not Pollyanna either, and I know that there are things that we can and should be doing. They may not be able to be implemented right away, but if we don't ever get to them, then we're going to continue to spiral in the wrong direction. I do want to say it's troubling that, look, it's absolutely important that counselors are connected to their wards and their communities, absolutely. But it's a dual role. You have to be connected to your ward and be responsive and responsible to your constituents. But there's also another responsibility, and that is the bigger picture of what the city needs to do, where the city needs to go. And we need to be creating a space where counselors are also thinking about the big picture pieces and not just the ward pieces. So I wasn't part of any of those conversations in the past, but that's part of what I'm hoping to provide in terms of leadership going forward, is let's put our big picture hats on and let's look to the future and how we start preparing today for that the future that allows us to address some of these pieces. And so I've got some real concerns around how do we change the tax base? How do we create a different ratio between commercial industrial taxes and residential right now because of the closure of so many industries, heavy industries have left. That has left us with some financial pressure that those taxes aren't there anymore. The property taxpayers have been footing the bill. So there's an imbalance between who pays for the preponderance of our costs as a city in terms of budget. We need to get more investment into the city, and that investment needs to include the investments of the future, the jobs of the future, the job lands that will be converted from, for example, the old Stelco lands, converted to good green jobs. And there's a good plan for that to happen. I went to visit the site very recently. They're talking about anywhere from 6,000 to 8,000 new jobs in green industries, which is fantastic. As we transition to a greener economy, we have to make sure that those jobs are decent jobs and that workers who are coming from industries that are transitioning out are not left behind. So there's a lot of work to be done around that. But if we grow, and if we make a plan to grow that commercial industrial tax base, it takes the pressure off the residential tax base. But as I was saying before, housing is a priority for me. And we know that as we increase our population with more housing, that housing or that residential portion of the tax base will grow as well. And that will help us. Yes, these things are a little ways away. And so the budget priorities have to be about how do we utilize today's funds, today's capacity to make the changes that allow us to get to those priorities. And that's how I would deal with things.
Transparency. The city of Hamilton has one of the worst records for freedom of information processing of any Ontario municipality. I'm confident you wish to fix that, so let's use a specific example, the mayor's office. The city recently restructured its record systems to ensure that freedom of information does not apply to the mayor's office, as the records are, quote, no longer in the custody and control of the municipality. What are your thoughts on the mayor's office and freedom of information?
I didn't even know that, Joey. To be honest with you, I had no idea that that was the case. And so bad on me that I didn't. I find it kind of shocking, actually. Transparency is transparency. There should be nothing hidden. And if you're utilizing, because the mayor's budget comes from the tax base, it comes from the property taxpayers here in our city. I don't believe that there should be a problem there. Unless there's something to hide. There's that old adage, right? Unless there's something to hide. And I don't know why that would have happened. I don't believe that that's the right place to go. If you're the mayor of a city and you're utilizing your budget in the best interest of the city, it should be pretty easy to be transparent about that. So I would definitely take a hard look at that and try to figure out why it happened. And if there is no good reason, then it shouldn't be happening. And I'd be prepared to reverse that.
Politics can be contentious. Political debates can and should at times be contentious. The lack of decorum at Hamilton City Council is embarrassing, but it's not only decorum that is a problem. Councillors do not follow the rules of procedure, they speak over each other, and they play politics until all hours of the morning. I'm going to play an audio clip from a council meeting. Please listen.
continue. Just a reminder that this is an opportunity to question the delegates,
so
not to be making comments.
So, Chair, do you agree with what I just said?
Very much so.
We can play that game all day, and it will end up that we will be here at 3 in the morning. But
so
that's
point
questions,
order,
please only. And I apologize
order,
for this, but Councillor Partridge.
Point yes,
of order,
thank
Madam
you.
Chair. Point of order. Point of order. The point of order is
I'm
the question.
On
point
of order.
Councillor Whitehead, no. Councillor Whitehead.
If it's a speech,
Councillor Whitehead, I have the chair. Councillor Farr and Councillor Green. Everybody, we're going to have a long day ahead of us. Tone down. Questions for? I apologize,
down,
by the
point
way.
Of order,
and thank
apologize.
You, Madam
and
Chair. I do
Councilor
believe
Partridge.
I have the floor. Thank you.
As mayor, you will chair council meetings. How do you plan to manage meetings as head of council to achieve results and inspire public confidence?
Well, that was a bit of a mess. You know, I've done this kind of work for some time now, and there's got to be just no tolerance for that kind of nonsense. It's about respect, and it's about providing clear leadership when it comes to not tolerating that kind of nonsense. I know what rules of order are. I think it's Bourneau's that we follow in the Hamilton City Council. You know, points of order have to actually be points of order. And it is up to the chair to determine whether, in fact, a point of order is a point or whether it is not. I think that modeling respectful management of a meeting is job number one. And so you have to behave the way you expect others to behave. Clearly model that behavior, and then be very, very strict, frankly, very determined to not allow things to unravel. Because as you heard from that clip, once things begin to unravel, it's really hard to pull them back. So I believe very firmly that that is the role of a chair, but that's also the role of a mayor. And that role needs to not only be during meetings, but it needs to be in all aspects of the work that a mayor does, whether it's working with Hamiltonians, whether it's working with Hamilton organizations. But one of the very troubling things that I've heard over these last number of months is that people won't come and delegate before council anymore, because they're not before committee rather, but or committee of the whole or GIC. But the fact that citizens and organizations in our city have decided to no longer have their voice because they're afraid of how they're going to be treated by the elected folks, as well as by some of the advisory committees to council, that's really, really troubling. And we have to turn that around. That's not acceptable. It almost feels sometimes like when I hear from people these kinds of comments, I almost get the sense that we've forgotten that the city is not, it's not us against them. We're all in it together. And so let's not have this kind of friction where we are protecting turf or we're shutting people down. That should not be the way we operate. We need to be welcoming people in. We need to be respecting people's voices. Of course, we can disagree. We're not going to agree on everything, but there's a respectful way to have those conversations. And we need to be engaging folks, not pushing them out. We need to be welcoming them, not, you know, using language and tactics that shut them down. So for me, that's one of the things we have to change. We can't have a bunker mentality. We can't have an us or them kind of way of doing things. Our city is all of our city, and we have to have mayor and councillors and staff and advisory committee representatives that are engaging and welcoming, not shutting down and insulting or badgering people. It's just it has to change, and I identify that as a huge issue. And as a mayor, I can chair meetings in a way that demonstrates that the value of people and their voices, but also the importance of respect.
I'm going to play an audio clip of Ward 11 Councillor Brenda Johnson speaking at the November 9th, 2021 council meeting.
We're all congratulating each other. I really want us to also maybe start focusing on some of the visitors that come into City Hall, and specifically developers that have come into City Hall. I have complained about several of them. They fell on deaf ears, and I'm hoping now we can have our eyes wide open to everyone and stopping the bullying that's been happening. Thank you.
What will you do to stop the bullying, harassment, and violence that occurs at Hamilton City Hall?
I would have zero tolerance for bullying and harassment, regardless of who's doing it or where it's coming from. It is shocking to me that in 2022, we have that kind of behavior happening at our city. Again, if you allow these things to fester, if you allow the space for these things to be legitimized, then it's just going to continue to happen. And it's really all about clearly shutting that kind of thing down and doing it with firmness. I don't know why these things unraveled the way they do. I don't know why Councillor Johnson had to address that issue, but it's absolutely not acceptable. It's absolutely not acceptable.
As mayor, you have an office budget of approximately $1.25 million. The reason is simple. You personally only have so much time in the day. As mayor, you need staff to assist in the role. How do you plan to allocate that budget and what measurable outcomes will your staff achieve?
Well, to be honest, Joey, I don't start measuring the drapes until I have the office. I don't think it's healthy to make assumptions about what the electorate is going to decide. I think that's a bit disrespectful. So I didn't even know it was $1.25 million. I had no idea, which isn't to say if I were to be elected, I wouldn't be very quickly trying to figure out exactly what the role of the mayor needs to fix some of the problems that we've been talking about already on this podcast. There's a lot of work to be done for sure, but I'm going to wait until the 24th of October, you know, to respect the voter and to, you know, determine first and foremost whether I even have a mayor's budget to deal with.
Strong mayor powers. The City of Toronto and Ottawa will begin this term of council with strong mayors, leaving Hamilton as the next largest single-tier municipality without those powers. Key to the strong mayor powers is an accountability structure, which enables the mayor to formally direct the city manager, select committee chairs, and set the initial municipal budget proposal. What are your thoughts on the strong mayor power regulations proposal published by the province?
First and foremost, at this point, Hamilton has not been pulled into that pilot project, if you want to call it that. But when I first heard about this initiative, I had some real concerns. I've always been a person that collaborates. I've always been somebody that pulls people in. I think I've described that earlier in our conversation. So if Hamilton were to be pulled in to that strong mayor's legislation or model, I would not stop being a collaborator. I just think that that's what we owe our city, what we owe our residents, what we owe each other, is to find the solutions to tough problems that we have in our city. I don't believe in dictatorial government. I don't believe in my way or the highway ways of doing things. And as I said before, I really do believe that engaging people, engaging, creating those relationships, and again, not always reaching a consensus. I think consensus is something that is very, very difficult to reach, but certainly having people's voices respected, being part of a conversation about these issues, it really helps, I think, with coming up with solutions that make sense. Having said that, I'm really troubled by what I hear as the agenda that the government has on the use of the veto power, particularly, because what I'm hearing is that if the council makes a decision that is contrary to the direction that the government of Ontario prefers, then the mayor can use a veto power to align with what the government of Ontario's direction is. And I just think that that's dangerous. And I think it's disrespectful of municipalities and their obligation to their own city. I think that our city needs to do what's right for our city. Hamiltonians need a mayor and a council that are always working in the best interests of Hamilton. And I get really worried that the undemocratic nature of that kind of initiative will have really negative ramifications to our democracy, frankly.
I have interviewed over 90 candidates this election, people who have stepped up to serve their community. Those interviews reveal that improving our parks is one of the most important and consistent ward-level issues. This got me to thinking. Many of Hamilton's greatest parks were designed and implemented by the former Parks Board, a citizen board which enabled residents to contribute to the governance of Hamilton. What are your thoughts on reestablishing the citizen boards and committees which existed in the past before their disbandment in the latter half of the 20th century?
You know what? That kind of thing is right up my alley. I've always believed that citizen engagement is extremely important. In fact, when I used to be a city councillor in Hamilton, I was the Ward 2 councillor, which it was smallest geographically, but I had the largest number, the most number of active neighborhood associations were in Ward 2. Why? Because I thought it was my job to listen to people. And to so if there's a park going to be built in Ward 2, it's not up to me to decide what the features of that park are supposed to be. It's not me to decide how best to utilize that green space to the benefit of the neighbors. It's their decision to make. And so Corktown Park is a good example of that. The Corktown Neighborhood Association, you know, pulled them in and said, okay, now let's talk about what you want. Do you want football? Do you want soccer? Do you want play structure? How do you want to do this? That's the way I roll. That's the way I've always rolled. So whether it's park, whether it's other organizations, I mean, I know there was a conversation about Board of Health, for example. These are things that I don't think should be held greedily by the few. I think these are things that need to be, we need to engage people. And so whether it's the model that you describe or whether it's another model, you know, it makes me think of the participatory budgeting piece. And I remember, I think it was Aiden, former Ward 1 counselor who, you know, the allocation of funds to each ward. And I think it was Aiden that really brought in the community to talk about how that allocation should be rolled out. And he didn't just sit in his counselor's office and dole out money. He pulled the community in and talked about how do we utilize these funds for the betterment of the people of Ward 1. And I really respected that. I thought that was really a cool thing for him to do. Of course, that's part of the participatory budget thing that had been happening at that time in many jurisdictions around the world, right? I don't see why we shouldn't be pulling people in. I believe that not only is it their tax dollars, but it's their neighborhood, it's their community, it's investments in, you know, in their everyday lives. And I'm very, very favorable to that kind of thing.
It's 2026. The Public Record is writing a review of the 4-year council term that is just ending. What 3 words do you hope we will use to describe your term on council? And what 3 words do you hope will describe council as a whole?
Collaborative, successful, and future thinking. For council, it would be collegial, open-minded, and engaged with community.
Thank you. Those are the questions that I have for you today. Do you have any closing remarks that you wish to share?
My only closing remark would be to thank you, Joy, for this podcast, for this opportunity. And thanks to the people of Hamilton. It's been a really great election campaign so far. There's a lot of excitement out there. There's also a lot of concern. And I'm really hopeful that on October 24th, I'm able to be victorious so that we can get to work on the things that are important to Hamiltonians.
This has been episode 146 of the Public Records, the 155 podcast. Thank you to the Hamilton Public Library for the use of their makerspaces to record these podcasts. Thank you to the readers and listeners of the Public Record for your support. You can visit thepublicrecord.ca to get more City Hall coverage, sign up for my City Hall newsletter, and become a member of the Press Club to keep me covering Hamilton City Hall. Thank you.